The date is June 20th, 1997, and we're watching Batman and Robin. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Batman to my Robin.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart. I was trying to think of a sweet tagline to put on there, but
yeah, you didn't have something, a little witty quip. Yeah. And this week, to talk Batman, because after we did the Batman, the movie, with someone else, this guy told me, no, you have to have me on for every Batman movie from here on out. So here we are discussing a Batman movie. So I brought along my son. Please welcome back Chris Wells.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. How you doing, Chris?
The Batgirl.
Okay.
The Batgirl.
The Batgirl. Yeah. I'll take it. At least I'm not dying.
So this week, we're looking back at June 1997 when the movies and theaters were My Best Friend's Wedding, Speed 2 Cruise Control, The Lost World Jurassic Park, Episode 10 Subject Con Air, and of course, our movie for today, Batman and Robin, which earned $238.2 million on a $125 million budget. It's the first Batman movie to not have the highest gross of the summer. I imagine that went to Jurassic Park.
It's going up against some large names, I guess.
My
but there are sequels
wedding.
And, yeah, I guess. I don't know. That's, yeah, rough.
Yeah.
Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so everybody chill. Go hit pause, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
This movie is also the first Batman movie since 1966's Batman the Movie that did not have any Academy Award nominations whatsoever. Every other Batman had at least, like, you know, a makeup or a costume or something.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it did get nominated for a Grammy.
Did it? Oh. Well, but not an Oscar.
Not an Oscar.
And I imagine it got nominated for a Razzie or two as well.
For sure.
Is it this one, or is it Batman Forever that has Kiss from a Rose?
That's Batman Forever.
Yeah, okay. I was like, did I miss it, or is it Batman Forever?
Yeah, that and U2's Touch Me, Kill Me, Kiss Me, Thrill Me,
right?
Rape Me, Juice Me, I don't know. Okay, so the tagline...
I'm good, juice thanks, me. Though.
Yeah. The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, well, I've got three. The first is... Heroes, villains, triple threat.
That's so fucking lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, like a word map going on here.
They go, inciting incident, climax, conclusion.
Yeah.
That's the tagline for my movie. Inciting incident, climax, conclusion.
Nice. Well, the second one, we continue the word map strategy here, and it's strength, courage, honor, and loyalty. On June 20th, it all comes together.
I'm surprised they left out brotherhood, if they're just going to throw all those things together.
Yeah, very wordy. Might as well throw it in.
Yeah, I mean, I've got something here that's close for you, Colin. The third tagline, strength now, courage always. Family above all. Batman and Robin.
Yes.
That sounds like a fucking Fast and the Furious tagline.
That's right. It's always about family. Yeah, I guess brotherhood is more suiting to Batman because Fast and the Furious now has the monopoly on
family. I was gonna say, yeah. At least they distinguished it. They knew what was coming ahead of them. They Batman and Robin at the very
end.
Yeah,
with the exclamation point, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So
they absolutely got it in there. Just threw it in your face.
Because that totally is a Fast and the Furious line.
Well, they may not be very good descriptions of movies because they're mostly just single word sentences. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
Woo!
I was really tempted to just, like, rattle off all of Mr. Freeze's best lines, but...
Seriously, it's so
27
hard.
27 ice-related puns in this movie.
Like, I know I'm known for bringing a quote to this, but it was rough to nail one down, because all of them I just wanted to, yeah, choose one of Mr. Freeze's lines.
There are a few that I'd, like, had completely forgotten that were gold, but... Anyways, with fancy new vehicles, gadgets, and an updated anatomically correct wardrobe, the dynamic duo Batman and Robin take on the chillest villain around, Mr. Freeze, and his plant-based gal pal, Poison Ivy. Things get off to a frosty start as the Cape Crusaders repeatedly butt heads while trying to take down Freeze, as Dick tires of being a sidekick and wants Bruce to stop treating him like a kid and start treating him like the 40-year-old man he is. Things between them get even worse when Ivy arrives on the scene and uses her power to get our boys all horned up and makes their nipples as hard as the ones on their uniforms. Meanwhile, Alfred is also dying, Bruce's girlfriend is pressuring him to get married, and Alfred's niece Barbara shows up just because it was about time we got Batgirl in the mix. Why not, right? Will the Dark Knight and the Boy Wonder be able to throw some cold water in those cod pieces and pull it together in time to stop Freeze from using a telescope to usher in a new ice age? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Yeah! Nice. That was a good one. Yes. Yeah, when Batman and Robin came out, I was working at McDonald's at the time, and so I remember all the toys. And so that's one of the things that's fun watching this movie is remembering, oh, the Happy Meal toys that we were selling at the time. I was so much more into the McDonald's merch when Batman Forever came out because they had the glasses.
Mm.
There weren't glasses with, you know, those nice glass mug style. Yeah, they didn't bring those out when it came to Batman and Robin. So, I mean, Batman and Robin, in my mind, was already off to a bad start. You know, this movie, I mean, they drove it into the ground. We know that this is where they drove the franchise into the ground. Yeah. But boy, oh boy, that's how I felt back in the day. Because it's like you go from like these couple of great Batman movies and then it stops getting as good and then this is what you get.
Yeah,
it's unexpected camp. Like, if you watch it looking for camp, that's great, but I mean, imagine if this was the last movie in the Dark Knight trilogy.
It's a you giant slap in reverse to the 60s again, which I appreciated about it, but yeah, it would be rough coming off of all these gritty Batmans and then to see that.
Yeah, so at the time I was furious with this movie, but for that reason. But now looking back at it, it's been a long time since I've seen this. I mean, I remember I was so excited for another Batman movie. Who wasn't? Batman Forever wasn't too bad. But, you know, this is what you got. But now looking back on it, though, I'm really appreciating the camp that is brought with it. Now, Chris, I mean, we had you on for our The Batman episode, and so we have talked Batman on this show with you before, but why don't you give us just a little brief, you know, sum up of your love for Batman and why you wanted to be attached to any Batman movie we had on the show, even if it was Batman and Robin.
Well, see, it's funny enough because this is a good movie to talk about it. My love for Batman really stems from my love for Robin, because I'm number one Robin / Nightwing fan before I am a Batman fan. Okay. Technically,
okay.
I mean, he was my age. I didn't really think I could be Batman, you know, when I was reading Batman or thinking about Batman when I was younger or whatever. So Robin is who you. I mean, that's why they made Robin in the first place, was to, you know, get the teens or whatever reading comics and the kids reading comics. So,
of course, it works. It's like, you know, the first taste is free.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Heroin or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But Dick Grayson was, you know, the first Robin. I'm the oldest brother of a bunch of siblings. So mm-hmm. I kind of emulate with him and Nightwing. And from there, Batman starts off, and of course there's a dozen movies before I'm born, so I watched them all when I was little, stuff like that. But
right on.
Yeah, I love Batman.
So
who doesn't?
Yeah, Batman on this show has been like tossed around for a while. I mean, episode 100, we were considering doing Batman 89, and now Colin, it was you that jumped us forward and said, "Nah, fuck Batman 89 and Batman Returns. Even fuck Batman Forever. I want to watch Batman and Robin." So, yeah, Colin, you know, what do you have to say for yourself?
Well, I thought if we were going to do Superman 3, then, you know, it was kind of already set that, like, we didn't need to go in chronological order when it comes to these films. Yeah. And for me, like, Batman 89, weirdly, is the one it's my favorite one, but it's the one that I watched pretty much last because it predates would have only been like 3 years old. Batman Returns, I was too dark. So like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin are like the movies that I feel like I was more like sentient for when they came around. Right.
So 66 and Schumacher were your step in. So
yeah,
that makes sense. Like
I didn't even put together the connection between the 66 and the Schumacher films. The weird thing I'll say about when you're a kid, I was thinking about this, all this stuff that I bitch about now when it comes to like comic book films are things that would have never occurred to me when I was a child. Like when I was a kid, Batman was Batman. The Batman in 1966 wasn't different to me from the Batman in 1989, which wasn't different to me from the Batman, like from Val Kilmer to George, like they were all the same guy. They were all Batman. Like I was watching Hercules today. I was trying to get my daughter into the Hercules Disney show. Yes. Movie. And I remember at the same time, Hercules, The Legendary Journeys with Kevin Sorbo was on the air. And it was the same thing. It's all around that era. Like Hercules was Hercules, Batman was Batman. But the reason I wanted to do Batman and Robin specifically was because this is the movie that I just remember being so psyched for it to the point that I collected anything. Like, Sean, you've talked about, like, you'd buy novelizations of movies. I had the novelization for Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
I had every cereal box that had those, like, 3D cards on it. Like,
yes!
I don't even eat cereal. I had, like, all the pop cans that had all this stuff on it. For things I didn't even drink, I'm pretty sure I had almost every action figure that you could get for this thing. And any time, like, I remember waiting up, like watching a like extra or Entertainment Tonight just to see like a 2 minute clip because they had like a small thing about the filming of Batman and Robin. And yeah, this movie just like, I was so excited for it. And when it came out, I loved it. I loved it so much. It was everything. And then, I mean, obviously like, you know, Batman went away after this movie, and then we had the better things like the Nolan and Batfleck for me, not for everyone, but still.
I like Batfleck.
And so,
yeah, I mean, it's funny that you bring up the toys because there was studio pressure, Joel Schumacher said, to make this movie more, quote, toyetic.
Yeah.
So, you know, you totally see that, and you bought into it big time.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I think when this movie came out, I was like the bullseye, like demographic it. So
yeah.
I think that's why it's in the premise of this podcast. This is definitely a movie I used to /love.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
And I got to say as well, too, to on your point, when I first watched all the Batman movies, it was never, all these movies suck compared to the other. It was, they're all Batman. They're all maybe a different version of Batman. Maybe they're not all the same. And I probably watched them all around the time that like Batman Begins came out or whatever. But I can't say I ever saw a flaw in them when I first watched them. Of course, it's when you watch them with a little bit more knowledge, you're like, yeah, they could have done more things. Why is Poison Ivy getting...
Yeah,
there's a lot of issues with Poison Ivy in this one, but yeah, I got to agree with that. Yeah, I never once I saw all of them and I went, yeah, this is awesome. Like, yeah. Oh, they're driving down hands and jumping off. And yeah, this is fucking Batman, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely have to question the team up between these two villains. It doesn't.
It's questionable.
Let's jump into Batman and Robin, directed by Joel Schumacher, produced by Peter McGregor Scott, and written by Bob Kane, who died a year after it came out. And so, unfortunately, Bob Kane never saw any future Batman. And Akiva Goldsman. And I think one could argue that Bill Finger should retroactively get a credit as well. Like, maybe we need to petition IMDb to get my credit on there and to get Bill Finger a credit for Batman.
Well, yeah, he should have a credit for all of them. But Bob Kane actually wrote the screenplay for this.
Well, no, it was probably a based on characters by or something
Okay,
yeah.
I was gonna say, yeah.
And did Bob Kane have a hand in it?
Yeah,
like an actual literal hand in
it? I mean, maybe this is just a comic straight from the 50s or whatever, like when he was writing them. Like,
I can't remember if it was this one or Batman Forever, but on one of them, Bob Kane was regularly on the set.
Oh, wow. That must have been Batman 89, if it was anything other than 66.
I think it was one of the Schumacher. It was one of the Schumacher movies.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Because okay. I remember. It must have. I think it was Forever actually. Because I remember. I think I saw an interview with Val Kilmer in one of the behind the scenes documentaries where he was talking to Bob Kane.
Okay. Well, so we open this movie right up with the frozen bat symbol right off at the beginning and some Danny Elfman, and we get the Batman and Robin effect and Arnold Schwarzenegger with top billing. I love how Arnold Schwarzenegger gets top billing. It's always interesting when the villain gets billing over the Batman. Or, in the case of Jor-El getting top billing over Christopher Reeve.
Well, at this point, isn't Clooney is coming off of, what, ER? What else is he known for at this point?
No, pretty much ER, and maybe From Dusk Till Dawn.
So, yeah, Arnold, it makes sense that Arnold is coming off of that. He's getting top billing. He's coming off of, Terminator? And...
Terminator 2, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to correct you. Danny Elfman did not score the Schumacher movies.
Oh, was okay. Who
is Elliot Goldenthal? That's why, I don't know. This is another thing for me. I don't actually consider the Schumacher movies a continuation of the Burton universe.
Okay,
I think I would say that they're a differing. If we're gonna go multiversal, they're a differing thing aside from
a different Earth.
Yeah, they look different, and then the score is wildly different.
But it's still the same Batman theme, though.
Sort of.
From Danny.
It apes it. It starts that way at the beginning, but then it turns into that higher. The Schumacher movies have that fast pace, that more fast pace, where the Elfman one is really slow and gothic and . Like, I don't know how to describe it. The Schumacher films are more frenetic.
I know what you mean.
I can't say I paid that much attention.
Yeah, they just tricked me.
Call yourself a Batman fan. Come on, just kidding.
Bro, I wasn't paying attention to the score. I was whatever.
Anyways, let's get to the nips and butts. Just kidding.
Absolutely.
So we're right into this movie with the glamour shots of the butts and the nips, and
I love it. I gotta say, suits don't look that bad, honestly.
Yeah, Chris, I was gonna ask, are you psyched that it's a Nightwing costume?
It's very Nightwing-esque. I don't know if it's fully Nightwing, and I was hoping for maybe a change to the color, maybe he changes to the blue, because at one point he decides to leave Batman. And he's like, I'm done with this.
Fuck you. Yeah, I'll do it on my own.
But also for this Robin to turn into Nightwing is kind of a disappointment, because he's kind of a bitch-ass Robin. But
I wonder, they clearly were going for a Nightwing-style costume. I wonder
Oh, yeah.
I wonder why they made the decision to keep the cape.
The cape and, yeah, the big, like, stripe down the middle or whatever to make it look more like a bird, I guess. Yeah. But...
yeah. Do you think we're ever going to see a teenaged Robin?
God, I hope. Well, James Gunn or whatever, he announced his new DC slate, and they said that they're going to do The Brave and the Bold as their next Batman movie, and they said that Damian Wayne will be their next Robin.
Yeah.
Damian Wayne... in the comics hasn't really made it past like the age of 15, 16 so far. So
I was going to say, definitely going to be a teenager.
There's the Titans. Robin. Yeah.
But like Jason Todd is, I would say he's a teenager.
Yeah. But I mean that, you know, that kid's in his 20s.
Yeah.
You need someone that looks more like, well, I guess he looks as young as like Tom Holland. So
He plays a good Jason Todd, I'll admit. Yeah.
I don't mind his Robin.
Well, Jason Todd specifically, because he's like a little shit.
True.
Yeah. I like the costumes in this movie. I thought...
yeah.
Even the silver one, though?
No, not the prototype.
The one that they
inexplicably
pull out.
Not the, like,
reason,
so whatever that
cold
suit is. But I like...
yeah.
I like the Nightwing-esque Robin suit a lot. And I even like the all-black... Batman suit. And I know people like to make fun of the nipples, but after I watched this documentary and I kind of got like what Schumacher was going for, like he basically wanted them to look like Greek god statues. Like that was like the aesthetic.
Like it was painted on.
Like
yeah,
that was the aesthetic that he was going for. And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of
shirtless.
I can kind of appreciate it. It looks
pieces
cool.
Yeah, he wanted to look at their dicks and ass and nipples. Yeah.
Well, you highlight the best features.
Of course, absolutely. I understand it. I'm not like dissing
his
style.
You know,
I'm just saying.
The thing is, like, you sexualize the Batman and Robin suit so that it's not as bad when you do it to Batgirl later on as well.
Well, right. She didn't have as prominent nipples to give him.
Well, yeah.
We don't
want to
look
nipples,
at the female form. We want to look at the male form.
Yeah.
That's what Greek art is about.
But
he also does this at the beginning of Batman Forever. So, I mean, it's kind of like his MO at this point.
Yeah.
This one, he just went a little harder with it. Yeah.
we know how sexy Joel Schumacher likes to make things with, like, Lost Boys and whatnot.
And to be fair, I wasn't listening to the score at the beginning, but I did notice that when the bat nips and the Robin nips are flashed, they play, like, a horror noise. It's like a ear or whatever. It's like a sharp noise where it's like, it should be, like, a jump scare noise, but it's just when they... But when they flash the butts, it's totally
fine. It's the
rusty
gate sound.
It's like, it's some shit. It's just like, yeah, it's like a high pitch.
The Foley work in this movie is on point. That's for sure. I do think worst Batmobile in my opinion, though.
It is. That's true.
Not a fan.
Yeah. It looks like an awesome toy.
Yeah.
Though.
Well,
so
it's the only one-seated Batman in any live action.
That's a thing, hey? Or yeah, because Robin has Batmobile to ride a bike. I wrote that. I went, fucking... fun opening, cool Batmobile, fun toy.
Chicks
Robin has
the car
to have a bike?
Yeah. He does, absolutely.
Like, I guess
he's
independent.
A
I assumed there was a second seat in it. I didn't even look that close.
It's a one-seated Batmobile.
That's dumb.
And it's probably the biggest one.
Yeah, like...
or, like, longest one, at least.
Well, unless you include the animated one, it's definitely longer.
Oh, okay. This is why Superman works alone. I guess this was actually supposed to launch, if it had been successful, this would have launched into a bigger DC universe back in the day.
Would this have been
the Nicolas Cage Superman Returns movie would have launched off of this. This is why Superman works alone. And, you know, they would have continued on and there would have been a Batman-Superman team up with George Clooney and Nick Cage at one point.
It is kind of weird because that line seems like such a throwaway thing to me, but like nowadays if this were the start, like that people would have been like that, somebody could have wrote like a 5-page article on the like importance of that one sentence.
Well, it's such a George Clooney thing. I mean, like, you know how like George Clooney is a big prankster and stuff like that, or, you know, huge sense of humor on set, or I don't know if you know that, but like he would go, because he was filming on the same lot as ER, he would go and visit the ER set in full costume while he was doing this movie.
Not really.
Yeah. He's quoted as saying after rapping, I think we just killed the Batman franchise. And he's been known to like personally refund people who saw it in theaters. Really? Give them money. Yeah, their money back for their, like, so, you know, and so the cast was asked, you know, would you like to keep anything from set? And Arnie said he would like to keep the suit. And Uma Thurman said that she would like to keep her throne. Elle McPherson said just merch with the logo on it would be enough. And George Clooney is like, he would keep Elle McPherson. So good old George Clooney. George Clooney's a fucking stud, man. I love George Clooney.
And I actually like, I like him better than Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
But his
Batman is not different than Bruce Wayne at all.
No, but I think, so I think that Batman and Robin is like, is the more I watched it, the more I was like, this is Batman 66 brought to like a new generation. I think
like
if you
how
go
Brandon
into it,
Routh was Christopher Reeve's continuation.
Yeah, like I think if you go into it with that mindset, like to your point at the beginning, Sean, about unexpected camp, yeah, mm-hmm. That's why this movie tanked. Because people thought it was going to be something like vastly different and kind of like continue in that like darker aura. But they went full like Adam West. And I think that George Clooney does like a stellar job of being an Adam West style Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to say, that's honestly why I didn't have much notes about this one, is it's just I immediately realized that I went, oh shit, this is just absolutely just. This is like 66 Batman had a sequel or whatever, and it was just brought together for like a darker 90s run or whatever. Like I just realized the camp of it all and fell into it, and I agree. Absolutely. I think the exact same thing, I gotta say.
Yeah, they have all the one-liners in the beginning, you know, and don't wait up, Al. I'll cancel the pizzas,
and
you
know.
And
the Dutch angles every time you see a villain. Yeah.
And the credit card.
The credit card, yeah. Yeah. Like the fact that they have skates, like
it's just
bat skates, like
which, it's so Batman. Yeah, I love it.
The thing that kind of clinched it for me was Mr. Freeze, because I was like thinking about the timeline, and this movie, when this movie comes out, like Batman the Animated Series is well underway, and Batman the Animated Series, I feel like kind of it changed how we view Mr. Freeze. Right, and like has had like a massive influence on even with like the Heart of Ice episode, because it made him this like sympathetic, super cold, like calculating like character.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh,
until that, yeah.
I was like, oh, like why not? If you wanted to like go, like I think Mr. Freeze as a Tim Burton character would be insane. Like he would be just, you know, I could picture a guy like Christoph Waltz playing that character, like somebody like with that type of tenor. But
you want to know the alternate castings?
Well, I just want to finish my point, but to like see that they went and made him essentially a Batman 66 style camp villain.
Yeah.
When they had like all the formula there to make him this ominous brooding presence, I thought was an interesting choice.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like they went really big with Poison Ivy too. I mean, Yeah. No, alternate castings on Mr. Freeze: Hulk Hogan.
What?
Ed Harris, Patrick Stewart, Sylvester Stallone, and Anthony Hopkins.
I like Ed Harris in that role. Not in this movie, but I like Ed Harris for that role.
Yeah. And, I mean, David Duchovny could have been Batman instead of George Clooney.
I can see that.
I can see that, yeah.
Did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger was like on the short list for Batman in 1989?
Like to be Batman?
Yeah.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
I mean, physique wise, I could see it. I feel like he was just on the short list for most action heroes at the time.
Well, yeah, he also could have been Superman in 1978, apparently. He auditioned for that. It's like,
I'm Superman.
I am Superman. I am Batman.
I think it's funny that, like, he wasn't considered for Bane.
Yeah, that's
being,
true.
Being, like, a massive bodybuilder.
Yeah. I mean, I have trouble buying him as a scientist in this movie.
Well, that's the thing, though. They bring it up. Here's my note. Give me a second. Let me find it. Oh, yes. They say that he's a two-time Olympic decathlete, which is the it's the event in the Olympics. I don't know if you know where it's where you do 10 events.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah. So they explain why a scientist would be so fucking ripped. They say he's a two-time Olympic decathlete.
But you're also telling me that someone that bulky is going to be able to, like, compete in the hurdles portion.
And you just have to win a certain number of them to get the qualify.
Yeah, I guess so.
So as long as you win, yeah.
He doesn't have a decathlete's body is all I'm saying. Like, they're usually more slender.
I'm sure he can fucking rock it, but yeah. they at least explain it a little bit. They should have said, yeah, he was a bodybuilder, but who knows? Do you know if that was in the Olympics at the time?
I don't know.
No. Bodybuilding? No.
Or, well, like, weightlifting at least. Like,
oh,
wait, like,
yeah, weightlifting.
Yeah, powerlifting or whatever, yeah.
Like, clean and jerk and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe they could have explained it as that.
Yeah.
At least.
I suppose so. I don't know. Yeah, I don't buy him as a scientist. I don't know. I mean, you know, like, they dirty up Uma Thurman at least to make her look like a scientist. But Arnie, I don't know. I have trouble buying it.
Right. She's got the duller hair, so yeah. She looks bookish.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it never, yeah, I can't say I ever like, thought, I just never really felt like his scientist nature really came into play all that much until kind of like the end. But I thought his campy Mr. Freeze was decent. I don't know how I feel about the costume. It looks really hokey at times. Like, it looks like it was super hard to move in.
It was 80 pounds.
There's a scene where they catch him initially and he's laying on the ground, and I'm wondering if you guys noticed it too, but is that a fucking dummy that's laying on the ground?
Yeah, that is probably the worst scene in the entire movie. That's after they're driving on the statue after the ball and they make that jump off the thing, and then it's just that shot of the cape coming over him and Batman raising his arms, and
it looks like
he either looks dead or it looks like a doll of some sort. It doesn't look real.
He doesn't move an absolute inch. Like, none of his facial expressions change slightly. Like, nothing happens. He lays there dead. Like, absolutely. I rewinded a couple times.
I'm
like,
is that a
fucking mannequin? Is that, like, is it too hard to lay in that suit that they just actually made a mannequin or put it on a mannequin and then had a couple guys lift it up? Like,
well, speaking of something that I had to rewind a few times to double check, there, you know, when he's setting off his laser and everything, or freeze ray at the end and everything like that, I had to pause on the keyboard because the keyboard was not a QWERTY keyboard.
Oh, no.
It was no, it was
yes, yes.
I even paused it and I showed Chris. And so I Googled, and there were other possibilities for keyboards, but of QWERTY is the one that ultimately won out.
Yes, I told
However,
you.
However, this particular keyboard I could not find in existence anyway.
So this one is just a random.
This one is just random keys. It spells out the word Carney at the top. So that's what made this one stand out in my mind. Is it's like, oh, it says Carney. It's the Carney board.
Plus,
but
do you know if by the time of 97 or whatever, if QWERTY had won out? Did you see that in your research?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
because at one point it did, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know when it came into effect, but I feel like QWERTY is what was used on typewriters back in the day.
Right? That makes sense.
Like, I feel like QWERTY has been around for 200 years already.
I'm not up on my keyboard related knowledge.
Yeah, give me a second. I'll
say I know the history of keyboards.
I'll run to the library.
I do feel like I listened to a This American Life once, though, that they had people, like, because QWERTY is obviously the dominant, but they had people talk about the other versions, and apparently there are some that are like easy, that are technically more efficient than QWERTY, but it's one of those things where it's like everybody knows it, so
yeah,
it'd be more difficult to get everybody
denier.
To yeah, exactly.
It would be like teaching everybody how to use a stenographer's keyboard. I mean, they can type fast, but they've got weird-ass keyboards.
Colin arranged his keys to be in just the alphabet formation.
Oh, God, that's the worst. Have you ever...
Fucking like, madman.
Have you ever had to enter, like, your license plate number at a parking lot using something that's in, like, alphabetical order?
We did it today, it just, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Struggle. It's just, I was just searching for all my letters. So anyway, could they have picked any two more like diametrically opposed villains to
right?
team up together? Because, I mean, I feel like they have very different objectives.
She says, you freeze the world, kill all the people, and then I can grow some plants and we'll be the only people left to populate it. Which makes me think that she just planned on killing him eventually. We'll be the only two to populate it. So she kills him and then... she populates it with plants.
It's just the plant world.
But also, her plant powers are very obscure. I have no idea what control she has over plants or what the fuck she does. Her seduction powers are very clear.
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher wants to make it clear that women, evil, especially when they try to seduce you.
It just feels like Clayface or Swamp Thing or something. You know, that kind of thing would be a better team-up than this.
Yeah. I don't know. That is the drawback of these Batman films, is they just need to find a way to, like, shoehorn villains in for toys and whatnot. I mean, I like Poison Ivy, but...
Yeah. But, like, adding in Bane even is just... Like, Bane hasn't been used well in a movie yet. Because, like, Bane in the comics, I remember I collected the series back when it was the Nightfall series that introduced Bane. And, I mean, that is a very cool series because he breaks all the villains out of Arkham. And so Batman is, like, going nonstop for 2 weeks trying to stop all these villains. And then Bane, like, finds him when he's tired. Like, Bane's supposed to be a genius. And so far, it's like we get this Bane.
Yeah.
And we get, you know, I have bordered the darkness, Bane. You know, like, I don't know. I haven't liked a Bane yet. I just don't think they use him right.
Well, the whole Tom Hardy Bane of it all, they have kind of changed Bane to be in line with Tom Hardy because he is kind of received well. I mean, I like Tom Hardy Bane. Tom Hardy's a little small to play Bane, but at least in the movie they filmed like upward positions of him to make him look bigger, I guess.
Yeah, I guess this is one that's always stuck in my side as like a you know, me being the comic book nerd that's like, "Eh, you guys aren't doing it right." I mean, like, you know, we bitch and complain about all the Marvel fans out there now that will do that. "Eh, you're changing that from the comics." But I mean, I guess back when I was 19, it didn't matter as much to me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, it stuck with me because, like, I wasn't, like, sick of that aspect of comic book fandom.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know anything about Bane when this movie came out, so I didn't really care too much. I mean, he's not, like, watching it now, he's clearly not, that's not, like, a true representation of Bane, for sure. But again, I feel like any one of those three villains could have carried a movie on their own.
Yeah.
You didn't need the team up.
Yeah.
Unnecessary, yeah.
Yeah. What I would love to see is the side quest movie of John Glover's character.
Old Lionel himself.
Yeah, I was going to say where he tells Lex Luthor about all the experiences he's had on his weird plant island.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is like the third DC movie he's been in because he was in Shazam, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I guess Smallville wasn't a movie, technically, but
yeah,
you do 7 seasons of a show and you're... it's as good as a movie, I would say, at that point.
Yeah. I like the action in this movie more than I thought I would.
Now, like, talking about like the goofy shit, like in the museum with the ice?
Yeah,
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, the skates are corny, but I kind of like that they end up playing this like weird hockey game with the goons.
Yeah,
and It's almost like an old school James Bond. You got the like rocket ship and they use all the gadgets and stuff.
True. Yeah.
The illogical weird sky surfing scene, like how are they staying on those boards?
I don't think
that's how physics works. Like,
no, I don't think so. And this
unless they have magnets on their boots, but I don't know.
Well, hey, that might be it. Yeah, yeah. But this universe also seems to have a lot of really abnormally large size diamonds as well. There are they're after this one diamond in the museum in the beginning, like skate battle. But like later on, the ray is powered by like all diamonds that size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's a diamond that size.
I was thinking too, I would love to see a Google Earth of Joel Schumacher's Gotham City, because I want to know, is there a city in our world that exists with, like, massive statues among all the buildings?
Oh my god, just so many statues.
The most unnecessary fucking observatory in the world. It's in a dude's hand. Yeah. You must just walk into the dude's leg and then take the longest fucking elevator ride of your life and then a staircase up to his fucking, like... That's just ridiculous. But,
yeah, bridges and everything are being held up by statues. Yeah. Ugh. The one you mentioned before about the driving down the arm and launching off at the fingertips. I mean, that's a pretty big statue.
Gotham citizens are paying for this with their tax money.
Yeah, I guess so.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
I joined the Riddler's gang or the Mr. Freeze's gang and freeze my balls off.
Yeah, it's almost like Joel Schumacher just said, I wanted to see how big and lofty I could make Gotham City.
I love it, you know, to an extent.
Like the Tim Burton one is so contained and small.
I wouldn't say it's small.
Well, no, but it, like,
I'd say it's cramped, but I'd say it's just as large. But I mean, they have a bunch of weird shit, right? Like I'm trying to remember.
You know what I would say about the Schumacher Gotham is it's high. I feel like everything is cliffs. Like massive. Like there's no building under like 30 stories.
And elevated trains and elevated cars, like bridges and everything.
Well,
like
and
that.
Then the whole thing's built on a bit. It's like surrounded by a Grand Canyon that dives 80 feet to the ground or whatever, because that ending scene or whatever where they dive and try to save each other, right?
Yeah.
It's just surrounded by canyons and shit, too. So, it's in the mountains and it's all up on, like, 40 stories.
But it's as tall as, like, a city in Star Wars or, like, The Fifth Element or, like, you know, Blade Runner or something like that. It's such a vertical city that it's, like, really, you're going for, like, Art Deco, but yet... futuristic
plus the Greek god whole imagery of it all. Absolutely, the Greeks and stuff would make giant statues and stuff. I feel like if they got to this age, they'd be making giant statues or whatever.
But see, if you're going to do that, you need to do the Bat Cave with the trophy room with the like giant penny.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Absolutely.
You know, they tried to do that in the Batfleck Batman a little bit, where he had a bit of a trophy room going on. But I mean, yeah, you need the T-Rex.
You need your T-Rex.
There.
You need your penny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joker card.
I like. I keep thinking for some reason that we've watched Batman Forever on this podcast, but Schumacher also loves these like villain hideouts. Like in Batman Forever, he had Two-Face's lair, which had the, you know, the one side was all white and marble and the one side was all red and like disgusting.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And in this one, Mr. Freeze has little snowman. His snowman lair.
Well, and he kind of gets the fun thing about Batman is that there's 1,000 people in the city of Gotham that all go to their day job and they put on a skin tight suit covered in Riddler question marks, or they put on a big winter coat and paint their face blue, or half of them paint their face red and or half of their face red or whatever and go to work. It's like all these normal people that are run by these madmen or whatever, and they just show up in these weird fucking outfits. So I love that aspect of it.
There is 100%. A lot of dedication going on with some of the makeup with the gang. gangs in this city.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like they're just like shivering and dying. Yeah, but
yeah. To Chris's point, like there's some career henchman in Gotham who just has like a closet full of like weird uniforms.
Yeah, it's like
I work for the Riddler. For
who am I working for today? Yeah.
All his old uniforms and name tags and hair nets.
Shows up for a Mr. Freeze heist in a Riddler suit.
Because the Firefly's in prison, so I guess I'll go work for Freeze.
I mean, I love the touch at one point when they break into the police station and you see, like, the Riddler and the Two-Face jackets in the police lockup. Yeah. I mean, you know, I do get a kick out of that.
Which I'm just going to point out doesn't make any sense because Two-Face died at the end of Batman Forever. He falls to his death.
He kept his jacket. I don't know.
Yeah, they
just for fun?
For funsies, yeah, absolutely. It was, I don't know, evidence in some crime, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, brutality.
Sure.
why not? Yeah. So, I mean, we're just all over the place. I don't even know what to say.
We're an hour in,
and it's like, okay, so the museum heist, and then,
we got through that part.
I do love the gadgets that they do have in this movie. Like, now that I've chosen to watch this movie with the point of view of, okay, this is a spiritual sequel to Batman 66.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I love that the things like the bat lasers.
And the bat credit card.
And the bat credit card and the... And just the terrible one-liners and, you know.
Terrible.
And the fact that, like, instead of just shooting Batman with his freeze ray, he decides to freeze a giant dinosaur instead.
Well, he freezes Robin fully solid.
Yeah, but it's like...
And then Batman picks him up like he's a fucking suitcase. Tosses him in the pool that didn't freeze.
Yeah.
And then heats it with his laser.
That's right.
What do you mean Freeze doesn't try to kill people? I thought freezing someone fully solid would fucking kill them.
Yeah.
That's my bad, I guess. Sorry.
Only if you can't unthaw them in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he looks at him and goes, ooh, what are you going to do? And then runs away. It's so dumb. But it's, I got to say, with the camp filter in your brain, I love it.
Like, John Glover is just fucking going for it.
Oh, yeah.
Uma Thurman is just chewing up scenery. Like,
she's like someone from, like, a John Waters movie, man. She's, yeah.
Yeah, she looked at what Michelle Pfeiffer did in Batman Returns and then, like, multiplied it by 10.
I was watching this movie with my girlfriend, and she said the gorilla sequence, which is later in this, she says it seems like a... If you've ever seen any of RuPaul's drag race or anything like that, it seems like a drag sequence because it's all about the reveal.
I don't know if I'd want to be at a party where there's people on swings above me, like swinging on vines over my head.
That sounds awesome, though.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of...
That party was a little too rich for my blood.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit, but also, like, you were invited, you wouldn't go? You telling me?
Well, I'd feel uneasy about walking through the middle. I'll just keep to the edges.
I'd assume.
I mean, I've been to places where there's people on like silk hangings that are doing like, you know, silk tumbling routines.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we discussed this in Road Trip, but I'm not really pro
auctioning
parties
women.
Where women are being auctioned off.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, and this is some very high society. I mean, are you telling me that Mr. Monopoly down there is going to be minding all of his manners when he gets one of those lovely ladies home?
Yeah.
No, like, I feel like they own those women.
Oh, yeah. That's quite possible as well. Like, we don't know what Bruce Wayne is actually doing on the side. He's selling some underground. He's in the sex trade.
Yeah, he's willing to pay $1 million for Poison Ivy later in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah.
He's up to something. We don't ever see the outside of Wayne Manor, I'm trying to think, do we?
No, we see that front gate that they like to show.
Yeah, in the garage.
But we don't get like a full.
And there's like a side of the house where, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's one moment where they're walking with Barbara when Barbara shows up. They're walking along the side.
Yeah, it's like a driveway along the side, yeah.
But no like establishing shot, no big.
Yeah.
Hey, look, here's Wayne Manor.
Speaking of Barbara, maybe the most like why the fuck are you here character I've seen in a movie.
Yeah,
seriously.
Ever.
Like, shows up. Ding dong. Oh, a new character. That's like, that makes it think, like, makes you think it's like a 60s Batman episode because it's just a character joining and then pause for like applause.
Yeah, but at least in the series, Batgirl, also, when they introduced her, was actually like Barbara Gordon and, like, you know, was there for a reason.
But even like when they're like, okay, well, first I'm going to start here. I remember her being in the movie more when I was younger than she actually is. Like, she's not even in it enough to, like, really have any purpose.
There was a lot cut because apparently she gained weight while doing this.
Yeah,
I've
heard that. That's well, so bad.
And I wrote here, yes, man, Batgirl is so fucking fat, what a cow.
Yep, she sure was.
Shame on her.
Yeah, no, I feel like she was in more of it, too. I agree.
And just poor her, also, for being ripped to shreds about that. Like, who gives a shit?
That's true.
Yeah. I thought it was weird to make her Alfred's niece.
Yeah.
A little bit.
When, I mean, you have Pat Hingle. He's right there. Mm-hmm. Give the guy a little bit more to chew on.
Yeah. No, but you needed to add more depth to the Alfred is dying storyline.
Yeah, I wrote here Chekhov's Alfred's death, because since the beginning they're just establishing that Alfred's probably gonna die in this one.
Yeah, I'll cancel the pizzas, and then he grabs his chest
and then quickly pops a shot into his arm. Stumbles.
But then with Barbara, like. Maybe the most like insulting line to Batman in this entire movie is when Batgirl shows up to save the day, and then when it's all said and done, she somehow has to let them know, like, oh, it's me, Barbara.
Yeah.
As if, oh, your little domino mask, like, just really, you couldn't get it.
Oh.
you have all our equipment?
What?
And you have suits that are remarkably similar to ours?
Wow. Yeah, like, did Alfred have, like, not only did he take the liberty of building this suit because he expected his niece to show up and want to be Batgirl for some reason, like, not only did he have all that foresight, but did he have, like, a secret room off to the side that Bruce Wayne had no idea about? Like, there was never a moment where Bruce would have been like, hey, Alfred, what are you working on over there now? Like, come on.
Well, they make it seem like even with the Robin suit in Batman Forever, like, Alfred just has these schematics hooked up to like a 3D printer waiting for somebody to find it and press play.
Yeah.
And then like they just go.
Yeah. But he's got suits sitting all over. There's like all these like experimental like sonar suits or ice suits or whatever.
Well, and it's, he's like, got a whole AI of himself built into the computer, doesn't he, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I can give the skates in the bottom of the boots the benefit of the doubt because they knew they were attacking something that, you know, or going in on something that had ice, right? So they chose the skate boots, which means that there is a row of boots and you have to like choose the right ones for that particular day. Oh shit, I hope I'm gonna need the rocket boots today. You know, like,
yeah, you click your heels together and all of a sudden you shoot 10 feet into the ceiling because you have the rocket boots instead of the skate boots.
So are you telling me, though, that with all this excess like bat gear just lying around the bat cave, that, like, you're not going to accidentally leave out your prototype Batgirl suit? Like, he knew that Alfred was working on this.
Well, yeah, exactly.
He's
the world's greatest
detective.
Alfred's obviously got the time to do this. I mean, if Bruce is out all night and sleeping all day, there's no way any part of that mansion gets fucking dirty. I mean, Alfred probably does a weekly detail on everything, and then the main rooms or whatever, and then the rest of the time he seems on the computer programming new bat suits.
Yeah, he seems too busy, like, you know, recording messages and ciphers and all these fancy things, so that when Batgirl brings it up on the computer, when Barbara brings it up on the computer, it has this animation of the Batman and Robin symbol. It's like, really, like, he has done some, like, some detailed programming on this thing.
Yeah, I got nothing to do.
Also, when Barbara shows up, I like how they have to make sure her dialogue, she states that both her parents died, as if, like, having dead parents is a prerequisite to join this club.
Oh, it is. It 100% is.
I mean, Dick Grayson, both parents dead. Batman, both parents dead.
That's right.
Come on.
Yeah?
Barbara Gordon might be a part of the comic so far, and yes, she has parents that are alive, but no!
No, not this Barbara.
Know all of the Bat people have parents that are dead. Yeah. Colin, what are you talking about?
Yeah, see, we have to appeal to the old people with Batman, the young people with this youthful Robin,
and the orphans.
And the girls, but they all have to have the same backstory. You have a very good point there.
I mean, Colin, if we don't appeal to the orphans, we just don't make the cut with the budget. I mean...
It's true. Batman is to orphans what X-Men is to, like, visible minorities.
That's right. Oh, boy.
I will say with Batgirl, excellent call, whoever decided, like, hey, let's get rid of this horned skull cap mask thing, and let's just not roll with that, because that thing looked awful in that last little bit when she's on her vehicle.
Yeah. But you had to make sure that she was wearing a helmet.
Yeah, I did remember being pissed off when I was a kid because the Batgirl toy was like a full-on like Batman cowl for Batgirl. And then in the movie, it wasn't that way. And being the, like, I don't know what you'd call it. The
purist?
The purist that I am. I want things to match.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also always like in the comics the fact that Batgirl has a wig to change her hair color.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, even then, if she had had, like, a red wig, even then it would have made more sense for her to be like, no, Bruce, it's me, Barbara. You know, oh, what? How'd you change your hair color, too? You know, and it's...
What do they say when she's like, she knows who we are. I guess we'll have to kill her. Time. We'll kill her later.
I was like, I wrote down, like, Batman advocating murder? What? Like, clearly it's a joke, but still.
Well, see, and that's the thing, is they've taken the charm of the original 1966 Batman, but they've made him more humorous about his things. I mean, like that's the thing. He's not earnest and serious like Adam West always portrayed it.
Right.
You know.
I think that's why, like,
Adam West,
there are times in this movie where I'm like, oh, man, like, George Clooney is, like, acting his ass off. But then there are other times where I think he's doing a great performance, but for some reason the tone of the moment or, like, just the movie in general, like, when he's talking to Alfred about their history, I think it's, like, really good stuff.
Yeah.
But when he's trying to, like...
How about when he's talking to Uma Thurman's character? Like, as the doctor, when he's trying to dismiss her all the things, you know,
there's that, but I was going to say, when he's trying to, like, to beef up the storyline of, like, the rift between him and Dick.
Oh, okay.
It just didn't come off well to me. Like, I remember that playing a lot better when I was younger, but when I watched it now, I was just like, I don't understand what your guys' issue is. Mm-hmm. With each other,
yeah.
Aside from when Poison Ivy is making you horny.
When she's
horny.
Roofied you. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I want a Robin symbol in the sky. Like, yeah, where did all this jealousy come from between Batman Forever and Batman and Robin?
He's just such a little shit. Yeah, it's like, dude, you're 30. Just move out if you want to.
That's right. You're not a fucking kid. It's not like he's like, hey, I want you to go upstairs and study, because obviously... Or did he do that? I forget. What was his punishment for, like, disobeying his orders? And I guess there was no consequence.
I can't really remember.
Clean your room.
Yeah. Clean your room. Yeah. Go to your room without dinner.
He's definitely... yeah, exactly. He's allowed to go out and motorbike all night or whatever, and he's a big bad boy or whatever. Yeah. So there's... Yeah.
Yeah, like, why does Barbara have to sneak out? Is she supposed to be, like, 15?
Well, no. She's giving off the whole... I'm a good girl from Cambridge.
Yeah.
I'm a Pennyworth.
Oh, that was another thing. Why isn't she English?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that too.
I think she did have a line about her parents originally being from another place.
Yeah.
So maybe she was fostered
in
the U.S.
I don't know if Alicia Silverstone can do British.
Damn.
I mean, I just, you know, it's...
Say it. Call her fat, too. Why not?
Yeah, I'll call her fat, too. No, she's not necessarily the best actress. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Alicia Silverstone in the Aerosmith Crying video. I mean, I was in love with her.
She's no Christina Ricci.
No, well, what? No. No.
You don't love her in Clueless or whatever?
But I was in love with Alicia Silverstone at this age because of the Aerosmith videos she was in.
And then she put on 5 pounds.
Yeah, and then she put on 5 pounds. No, and then she... But I don't think she was ever the best actress in the world, so...
Fair.
So I don't think we'd want to see her attempt a British accent. It would sound like when I attempt a British accent.
It'd probably be, yeah, like the Keanu Reeves in...
Hello, Uncle Alfred!
Dracula movie or whatever, yeah.
Oi! I've been working as a chimney sweep, yeah. I have!
Hello, governor! Cup of tea, innit?
Oh, Lord.
Well, and I mean,
you
like...
You do a better one, come on!
I mean, I guess she does play the dual personality of Barbara pretty well, you know. She's got her badass street personality.
Yeah.
You know, biker chick personality. Man, there's a lot of gimmicks going on with all those gangs, all those biker gangs.
Yeah, the big,
They look like Mad Max.
There's the Clockwork Orange ones as well.
And the
fucking glow-in-the-dark ones. Yeah,
that's too much, man.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher loves his fluorescence.
Yeah, you have to set up your secret hideout with black lights. That's the only way this gimmick is actually intimidating.
Just normal lights and black lights mixed in so you can actually see around and shit. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like when the ugly lights come on at the club. You know, you stay there till last call, and then the ugly lights come on. You know, you see the world for what it really is. That's what it's like when these guys walk out in the daylight. But I don't think it's ever daylight in Gotham City. It doesn't seem to be.
Never.
Well, I was going to say, one of the big differences, and the other thing that makes this movie remind me of Adam West's Batman, is how much of it takes place in light. Like, how often... Like Batman, like the fact that Batman and Robin are just appearing as special guests at a gala in like a well lit thing, and they're literally there to like smooth
and give away stuff like that.
And
auctioning.
I have to say, this one has something that I did give points to the Batman about when we did our little mini-sode about the Batman mini-sode. But. When we did that, I said it was so cool to see Batman in a setting that wasn't a rooftop or an alley. And, I mean, this one does it for sure. So, it's, yeah, fun to see them in a little gala just doing a little giveaway. It's silly.
Yeah. Well, and I do like when you get to see some of the, you know, rich opulence of Wayne Manor as well. You know, they did that a bit in the first one with, you know, his suit of armor room, but they do it in this one with the garage full of cars and bikes and everything like that.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the only places that you actually ever see a logo in this movie. I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner!
God, he was waiting. We were jumping around too much. He had no idea where he was going to throw that in.
I have nothing for this one because always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Batman and Robin is brought to you by Mercedes and Snap-on Tools. Plus the fictional Nemo Gum, Snowy Cones Ice Cream, Gotham Wigs, and Wayne Enterprises. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
I could have sworn there was a Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Like in the scene where Freeze is like freezing the entire city, I swear that one of the businesses has like the Taco Bell logo on the windows.
Message in if you've seen a Taco Bell in the show.
I don't remember seeing a Taco Bell. No.
But geez, really?
Snap-on tools. Yeah, he had a Snap-on tool kit in the garage. Yeah, just Snap-on tools and Mercedes.
So the studio dished out what, like
$125 million
with no sponsorships. With
come
no
on, sponsorships when we see Alfred make that CD, there's no like Memorex or no. Like
no,
huh?
Yeah. Yeah, there was one point, like, actually, I will say that on the computer, up in, like, the tiny, tiny corner, it looked like it was, like, the Apple logo, like, on the screen, in the, like, on the window. It looked like there was an Apple logo, like the but the computer itself, no, they did not display any logos.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. But I guess Batman drives Mercedes in this.
As he should.
Yeah.
I think we should all drive Mercedes. I think that's what the movie's telling me, at least. I think I might go buy a Mercedes.
Did you guys feel like Wilfred was a red herring?
His brother?
I felt like he was going to be the guy to show up and save the day. Yeah, he keeps mentioning how he has to find Wilfred, and there's no real resolution to that. No,
Wilfred shows up with a serum.
Yeah, that would have probably come in Batman 5, if that had ever been made.
Yeah, the next one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what this movie is missing is having Robin actually go out on his own.
Absolutely.
Like, having them actually, like, I would have said, like, just scrap everything, like, scrap Batgirl completely. And take whatever time she chewed up to, like, have some scenes of Robin and Batman having actually gone their separate ways and, like,
realizing they needed each other, yeah.
Well, yeah. As long as it could be done in a musical montage where you see one of them sitting on a rooftop looking at a picture of the other one.
Well, you know? Yeah, that was, yeah. I thought that was already decided. Yeah. Of course it would be musical.
Yeah.
Dick could just leave the gadgets behind and get some billy clubs and what are those things called, like Kimura sticks or whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Escrima sticks.
And we see like Batman drinking and like, you know, beating people up and going too far with it.
Yeah, Robin accidentally kills a guy and has to hide the body. Yeah. He goes, oh fuck, Batman kept me in line.
Oh.
He comes back to the fucking manor.
Part
just
5
shaking.
Writes itself. What I mean, we need to launch off of the Schumacher verse and make another one.
James Gunn, hit us up.
That's right. This could be one of your Elseworlds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Schumacher.
I mean, I heard there was a rumor going around for a few weeks that the Clooney Batman was going to show up in an after credit scene of The Flash. And to be honest, I'm there for it.
I would take it. Yeah. I would 100% take it. Yeah. So poison ivy and pheromones. I want to know about whether Robin's wax lips would actually work. You know,
it's hard to test, but we can try. If you're willing.
I feel like whatever toxin she's secreting, it's either like, I don't know, it's almost like, does she have some weird, like, things that come out of her lips? Like, what is secreting the poison? And is it just skin contact? Because would it leak out and go around?
Can she control it? You know, is it like a King's Midas touch? Is she going to poison anything that... Can she have a normal relationship anymore?
Yeah, what if I'm a buddy of hers and she goes, oh man, you really have to try this strawberry banana smoothie. I mean, I taste it and I just drop fucking dead.
Yeah. In the comics, you know, Harley Quinn and...
They make out a bunch.
Yeah, and Poison Ivy hook up. So I guess she must be able to control it. Or is that... an invention of the Batman and Robin movie that she can poison people by kissing them?
I feel like I can't distinctly answer that. I feel like she's not much of a kisser in the comics. I can't recall a moment where she really kisses many people. I feel like she does kiss people when she brings people under her, like, spell. I feel like in animated specials and stuff like that, she'll give people a kiss and then all of a sudden they're under the Poison Ivy spell and they have to do what Poison Ivy says. So I Poison feel like Ivy is a little incorporated.
Yeah, she's one of those characters that her skill, her power set kind of changes dependent on
the need,
what the situation requires, okay. Yeah, and who's writing her for that specific moment. And
yeah,
does she have bat skates right now? That's the question. Yeah.
Well, in the game, she takes over the whole prison or the whole city at the end of it. Like, yeah, she her power set is very skewed, I'd say.
Like, from what I know, it's more her. It's more about control of plans, but she doesn't actually do all that much in this movie.
Not at all,
and not really about like her Spider-Man style taking on plant-like abilities.
Well, I even think about the fact that she's supposed to be this, like, you know, environmental, like Mother Nature, and her first order of business after her rebirth is to burn all the plants in that greenhouse. Isn't that, like, yeah, just straight up,
I wrote that down, know, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that straight up, yeah, murder, she, in, yeah, this situation, oh, according
Poison
to
Ivy
her?
Burns a bunch of plants? What?
Yeah. Be, yeah, like standing outside a vegan restaurant with signs that say, like, you know, carrot juice is murder, you know?
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, from everything I know about plants, they don't generally like the cold. So even to go back to their previous point, I don't know that I fully understand why she wants to team with Freeze to freeze the Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. They feel like they would be rivals in this venture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I can see why Two-Face and Riddler hooked up in, you know, the Batman Forever version of those characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, these people are completely opposite in what their agenda is. It's like, you have to be like, you have this, you know, I'll leave the Arctic alone. Go live there.
Polar opposites.
Polar opposites.
Polar opposites.
Okay.
Sorry. Because yeah, the just poles are cold.
Yeah.
In case you didn't understand, sorry.
The other, like, now with my comment about all the accessories of hanging around the Batcave earlier, you know, how thankful is Batman that he decided to make these, like, ice-compatible vehicles as well? Where were these sitting around? The Batmobile that has, like, skates on the side.
There's a garage below the garage.
Oh, okay.
Duh. And that garage holds a shitload. So the bottom garage must hold a shitload.
I guess it has the part that comes up in the middle that has the Batmobile, the turntable, so...
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like a multi-disc CD changer down below with the cars.
In the 1966 Batman... The bat cycle is literally just being hid behind a bush.
That's true. So
maybe it's that sort of scenario.
Yeah, yeah. The bat boat is just tied up to a dock.
Tied up at the harbor.
Right at a public pier.
Yeah, next to a bunch of other yachts. It's like next to Bruce Wayne's yacht. It's like tied up to the same fucking dock.
Yeah.
No one ever catches on.
Bruce Wayne's boat, not Bruce Wayne's boat, right, yeah, there.
Yeah. It is strange that they go from beating Poison Ivy, and now they know what's, like, they know what's up, they know how emergent things are, but their thought process is, no, we have to go back to Wayne Manor, change into our new uniforms, get the shit, get the vehicles, and then roll back.
Yeah,
into Gotham to go get Mr. Freeze.
And who built all this shit? Fucking Alfred. You know, this old man built all this shit for them. Had to have been.
Yeah.
He made the suit for Barbara.
There's no Lucius Fox in this world.
No, there isn't. The other thing I remember, like, when I was saying that he's a computer genius, I forgot to mention the fact that Alfred has basically invented AI. Because when Barbara, like, comes into the Batcave, he has, like, this Max Headroom type, you know, I knew you would come. Like, you know, it's Alfred's invented AI.
Yeah, yeah. He becomes Jarvis.
Yeah.
Anyone could do it.
He's a computer genius. Yeah.
The end of this movie I remember being a lot cooler than it was.
Yeah?
Like I love the sonar suit at the end of Batman Forever, but... Clooney's suit not a fan. I do kind of like the silver on the Robin suit. It looks pretty dope.
See, that's the closest to Nightwing you get in this movie, I think. That's closer than the red.
Well, the red is Nightwing in at least one of the... I think in the New 52, they start with the red.
Oh, okay.
So it is, but it's the middle section to that is the only thing. Like, the Nightwing is just like a V, basically, across the chest.
Yeah.
So other than that, they kill it.
The banter between Dick and Barbara is so cringe.
Yeah,
absolutely. That it's difficult to stomach. Like, their whole... like little girl, little boy thing that they do is very strange.
Awful.
It's like, what is Dick's goal? Is he attracted to her? Is he not? Are they like in a weird sibling relationship now in their Bat family, or are they romantically linked? I couldn't really figure
it
out.
What's the end game, Dick? Yeah. What are your intentions?
Joel Schumacher is way ahead of the whole stepsister porn game or whatever.
we forgot to mention the Coolio's cameo. Rest in peace, Gangsta's Paradise.
Coolio, R.I.P. I had that in my notes too. Yeah, R.I.P. Coolio. Yeah, where he's playing the role of some guy you would see in the Fast and the Furious movie, taking everybody's bets.
Yeah. There are times. I mean, obviously, like, most of this stuff, when you're at ground level in Gotham, you can tell it's being filmed on a soundstage.
Uh-huh.
But there are other times when things are falling or people are being held at great heights where the background green screen in 1995 is so terrible that it takes you right out of the movie.
Well, this is the third time to bring it up, but there's the part where the cars are racing down the arm of the one statue, or sorry, the bikes. And I was looking at that going, okay, those are totally computer animated. Like, they have to be. And, like, that's one that I noticed. And I think some of the surfing stuff, they're falling out of the rocket surfing was a little rough, too, with that green screen.
I feel like we do have to give it up a little bit. They did use, at least from what I saw, a lot of miniature work as well.
Yeah,
clearly there was a lot, like the laser falling off the cliff or whatever and exploding.
The physics just didn't feel right in that one that I...
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
The one that was rough for me was in the motorcycle race after Dick catches Barbara. Anytime you see her, like... where the camera's facing down at her face, and it's so shaky, like the background that they're using and fuzzy, that it was weird. And then at the end of the movie, when Batman saves those two scientists after the observatory falls, like, it actually looks pretty cool, but you can just tell like they're in a green screen soundscape.
Those scientists, I mean, that was one of those things that I completely forgot about their existence in this movie. There were a few of those moments where I'm like, oh yeah. Like when John Glover showed up, I completely forgot that John Glover was in this movie.
Yeah.
But the scientist bit at the end where there's actually stakes of some civilians possibly dying at this moment, other than, you know, the ones that are being frozen all over Gotham City. I forgot that they were there.
And the dog that gets frozen mid-piss.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about him.
Classic.
Or her.
Classic.
I want to know the science of how Mr. Freeze's jail cell works. His cold zone.
Right, yeah. It's like just a straight down beam. They did say something about a cold beam beaming down on him, I guess is the correct vernacular there, but... he just immediately steps out of it and starts to die.
Yeah, starts like choking, and that
the
they're inconsistent
the
with that too.
Room temperature, and then the cold zone is like a freezer.
Maybe
how do you maintain that cold area?
Yeah, but at the end when he's dying, he doesn't seem to be choking on the air the way he is when he steps out of the cold zone.
Yeah. My question was more, why at the end do they allow him to be in his suit? That seems like a recipe for escape.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, is the prison supplying diamonds to make sure that it stays powered?
Yeah, exactly, right.
Like, what you need is allow him to have the suit, but it has to be plugged in with an extension cord.
Also, that's you the know? Only fucking way to operate your suit.
Diamonds?
Diamonds? Yeah. Like, way to choose the most bogus way to operate your suit.
And like, what happens to the diamonds? Way. Like, he keeps having to replenish the diamonds. Just
burn up?
Yeah, so, like, what, these diamonds turn to ash?
Absolutely.
And what? And you're letting this suit be on your body? Like, what is powering this?
His suit compresses eight diamonds worth of ash into another diamond. So it does have a little bit of an output. But other than that, it's just spending diamonds. Seven diamonds it gives you.
Or, one. You know, of course, not diamonds, but plenty of ice.
Nice.
What if, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how this would have played now. It definitely would have come off racist today, but I would have loved to see Mr. Freeze, like, roll up on the den of some sort of, like, 90s era West Coast gangsters and just be like, give me all your ice and then I'll take all their chains. And just have the vacuum sucking, like, all the diamonds off.
That's right.
Pulling people's grills out.
And with the ending, not only does he get to keep his suit, but they put him in the same cell as Poison Ivy. You're going to have two prisoners in the same cell, let alone two prisoners of opposing genders.
And yeah. Known, like...
yeah, a known collaboration.
Collaboration,
yeah.
Is the word, yeah.
Yeah. I also don't know how I feel about glowing medicine. You know, when he does save Alfred at the end with Victor Freeze's research, yeah, they bring in this glowing blue medicine.
Yeah.
It's like, that looks radioactive. I feel like
that's just a staple of this universe. Everything glows.
Absolutely.
I guess so.
It has to, or else it wouldn't work.
Even, like, Freeze's suit, I couldn't tell at times. There must have been, like, a light right on the chin to, like, reflect blue into his mouth or something. Yes, or he had something in his mouth
to make his teeth glow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the blue is a really cool blue. Like, it's like, I like the fact that he's sparkly.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
it's very shiny.
I am disappointed that he didn't have the jar head, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been nice.
Can't cover up Arnold Schwarzenegger that much, I guess.
With a big glass jar? Okay.
Well, but then you got to bust out the Mr. Freeze, like, red goggles and everything, too.
Well, yeah, that would be fucking awesome.
I want to see Clayface in a movie.
Clayface would be really cool, too, but yeah. I mean, CG's gotten there, that Clay... Anyways.
If you can do Killer Croc and whatever the shark guy is.
Shark guy?
King Shark,
okay. Yeah, if you can pull off that shit. Yeah, you can do Clayface.
Fair enough.
Well, there we go. That is Batman and Robin. Now, Colin, Chris, on IMDb, it scored 3.7 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 28. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 12% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 16%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like any number of Batman fights... Hit us with some reviews.
All right, I have quite a few for this one. So I'm going to read them all, and then if you want, you can pick and choose if you want to cut any.
Okay.
But Classic Boxing Matches gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, "The final verdict is this movie cops so much flack for being bad, but when you take it for what it is, it's actually a fun ride. It's a far departure from Michael Keaton's Batman films and only slightly more camp than Batman Forever, but it has much more fun with the cartoony aspects and doesn't take anything seriously. Think of it as an homage to the TV series as opposed to an actual action film, and you'll enjoy it a lot more."
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, that's where our minds went with the majority of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
D says, "I was 12 years old when this movie came out, and it's my favorite movie as a kid. It really captured the energy I had of reading comic books and my imagination while playing with action figures and then having them be real in a movie. I couldn't have asked for a better movie. It really felt like a great story that you could only wish of. I wish there was more like it. There is no more imagination in superhero movies. Have never been the same. Things that were supposed to be for kids are made for adults now, and everything has lost that childlike personality and appeal. This movie was the perfect example of what I enjoyed about movies as a kid to begin with. It was the best entertainment I could have asked for. I am so grateful I got to experience and enjoy it and see it in theaters. I felt like it was made just for me and my friends of that time and those born around 1985.
Well, yeah, it was a Happy Meal toy, for God's sake. I mean, that toy-tastic or toy-toyetic. Whatever it was, toyetic. Yeah, I mean, that's 100% what it was. You have two Batman suits in this movie because it sells double your action figures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenneth Neff says, 1 out of 5 stars. I oftentimes have to ask myself why I enjoyed this movie as a child, LOL. Looking at it as an adult, you see how poorly written and an absolute horrible train wreck this movie is. First off, the actors in this movie are great actors, just very out of place and questionable as to why they were casted. The action is cheesy and downright goofy. Memorable villains are disrespected in how they were portrayed, and if you listen to others' opinions, to which I agree, it feels like a publicity for a toy commercial. The only praise I'll give this film is in its cool set designs and interesting take on some costumes. I personally don't recommend this film unless you just want to relive some 90s nostalgia, but even that is pushing it.
Very unusual set designs. I will definitely emphasize unusual because...
So fun, though.
Yeah. Someone had fun. Yeah. Some very expensive statues.
Joshua Hartnell says, anyone who hates this film is a terrible person. This film changed my life for the better. Thank you, George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell. Most of all, the greatest villain of all time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is Mr. Freeze, with some of the best quotes of all times. If revenge is a dish best served cold, then put on your Sunday finest. It's time to feast.
This
changed my life in so many ways. 11 out of 10 would watch again. Love you, Joel Schumacher, XOXO. P.S. The best of the movie is the bat nipples. Get me that Batman credit card, please.
Which has an expiration date of forever.
Yeah, through forever.
Batman forever card.
Kim Owen gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, to you people giving bad reviews on this, you have no taste. I bet you like to watch Star Wars, don't you? This film is the best one. George played Batman extremely well, and the whole film is a masterpiece. Absolute freaks you lot are. I'm fuming. Get your stuff together, because this film is a solid 10 out of 10. I rest my case.
I'm sorry. I bet you like watching Star Wars? So that person somehow gave this like subtle insult to Star Wars at the same time while writing a review about Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Good for them. I hate Star Wars too. Fuck.
Zachary Payne says, this movie is so awful that I almost felt like laughing as soon as I got to the film's opening. This whole film felt awkward. The acting was terrible, the casting was odd, and the effects were cheesier than this 60s Batman TV show. This movie gets 1 out of 5 stars, worst movie of all time, until 20 years later when the Emoji Movie was released.
Wow! all these, like, crafty users on the internet that are taking these like subtle digs at other movie franchises or franchises. Emoji Movie, never, that's not a franchise,
but not yet.
One can hope, fingers crossed.
I can't wait for the poop emoji solo movie.
The poop emoji solo movie, that's Patrick Stewart, isn't it? Isn't Patrick Stewart the one that does the poop emoji?
I didn't watch that movie.
Oh. All right, last one. Finn P, 1.5 out of 5 stars. I watched this movie with my brother, and he likes Son of the Mask, and even he thought this movie was dull, stupid, and creepy.
How are you finding these? Son of the Mask taking shots now. Sorry, did I interrupt? Was that over?
No, that's okay. That's the end. Yet that's the end.
Oh boy, wow, people shitting on the Emoji Movie, Son of the Mask, and Star Wars. Star Wars taking fire. Oh, boy.
How could they?
So, yeah, IMDb scoring this in the 30 range, and Rotten Tomatoes going much lower in the 12 and 16%. Batman and Robin, I came into this going, ugh, Batman and Robin, but I can't wait to see it. And I had a great fucking time watching this movie myself. I mean, it was... I went into it thinking camp, and I enjoyed every little bit of it that oozed. It's a terrible movie, but as a spiritual sequel to, like, the 1966 Batman, if you think of it that way, you know, channeling that Adam West spirit in the same way that Brandon Routh was trying to bring new Superman to life. As a campy, it's stupid and it's cheesy and it's so much fun. And on this viewing, I loved Batman and Robin, but I know objectively it's a really terrible movie in the whole grand scheme of superhero movies.
Right.
But it's a fun time.
It's fun.
Chris, Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I gotta say, I went into it knowing that it's definitely not the best of the Batmen out there, but immediately I understood what was going on. I saw Dutch angles everywhere. I saw camp to the nines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately realized it was, yeah, just a continuation of the 60s Batman, and that made it everything acceptable. Because it was just, you know, it was Silver Age Batman, it was all silly, it was, and then 60s Batman continuing off of that, and it was just, it was fun throughout. Obviously, it's one to keep on in the background. I don't know if it's one to fully pay attention to. But, you know, out of 10, I don't know, I'd give it above 5 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Colin, Batman and Robin. You wanted it.
All right, guys. I got a hot take.
Hot take. Let's hear it.
I don't think this movie is the piece of shit that people say it is.
God yeah. Damn, that is hot. That's steaming.
People like might hate, but like, if you look back at the Burton films now, having seen the Nolanverse, like all these '90s the '89 to '90s Batman movies are hokey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they all have like even the Burton movies, like, as much as people want to say, oh, that was like a Batman, it's so dark, but like, it is dark, but it's Tim Burton dark,
yeah,
which is not like Frank Miller dark, or like,
no,
it was the closest, yeah, that you had at that time, but it's not the Tim Burton Batman is not the Frank Miller Batman that people like want to believe it is, yeah, just because they came around.
It's not Matt Reeves.
Burton Batman made Batman dark in the comics too. So like, yeah, he's what stretched that medium for sure, right?
Well, I think Frank Miller and Alan Moore, their take of Batman in the comics made Batman dark in the comics.
Right.
But well, Batman.
Is that before 89?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Dark Knight Returns. Dark Knight Returns is 86.
Okay. I feel like. Okay.
And so, but I mean, like the Batman, like Batman 89, definitely still had its influence, and I would still argue like the animated series has more of an influence on the comics than any of these films.
True.
I say all that to say like, Batman Forever, I think Schumacher tried to make a Tim Burton film. And I get like what people are saying with this one about Batman and Robin, how it's basically just a giant toy commercial. But I kind of appreciate that he took the swing to make it a cartoon,
yeah,
and took the swing to like bring it to that 66 level. And
we'll see.
Like I said before, I get if you didn't, if that's not what you expected, you would hate it. But I think when you go back now, if you go into it that expectation, it delivers on that like almost perfectly.
Yeah.
It delivers on the Adam Westness, in my opinion. And maybe it's just because we watched that one most recently,
mm-hmm,
that I was pretty impressed by how well it just captured that kind of aura. And I also think that we talked about this with Brad when he was on the podcast for Batman the movie. I feel like I want a light, whatever they do in Batman the Brave and the Bold, I kind of want a lighter Batman.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sick of the brooding, like the brooding, tormented, like I'm sad all the time, depressed Batman. Yeah. Like I kind of want like
someone that's having fun with his job.
Yeah, or yeah, like, and I'm actually psyched that Damian's gonna be the Robin, because I think having the fatherhood aspect of that will be cool. But
and the whole,
I don't know,
family.
We talked about that in the podcast, about how it's like it would be nice to see, like, even in the comics, Batman wasn't always like, there were times where he was super campy, and then there are times where he was super like hard and dark. Mm-hmm. But like, I think it's time we find somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope for in the next Batman movie.
Well, yeah, but, I mean,
yeah, Batman and Robin, I loved it.
I like how you say that, you know, Batman Forever is like Joel Schumacher was trying to make a Tim Burton film, because it is interesting that even though that one is so neon, it's a much darker movie than this one, just in the sense that there's the Riddler is in the shadows when he is created. Mm. And, you know, and they're always going to, even though the places are all neon lit, the rest is still all black. Whereas this one, no, he really tried to show a much bigger Gotham City, because at that point he's like, no, fuck it, I'll just Schumacher this shit all the way. I'll completely Batman the animated series it.
I guess what I'm ultimately saying is, prior to watching this movie, now I would have put in best to worst of this original like quadrilogy or whatever, I would have basically put them in order. But I actually think I like Batman and Robin more than Batman Forever.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I can see that.
But Jim Carrey, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, I feel like I haven't seen Batman Forever recently enough to make a good enough opinion on that, but
I haven't seen it in forever. And there we go. That is Batman and Robin. And that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big huge thank you to our special guest, Chris Wells, coming to talk everything Batman with us.
Thank you, Chris. You're welcome. I came so far to be here.
I know. Travel miles.
Miles.
Miles. Any last words?
I did write down one quote. There's a time where, I forget what's happening, but there are two henchmen on the verge of death at the very least, and one of them says, classic Fred Durst line, he says, "It's one of those days!" And then gets crushed by something. So,
nice.
Let's leave it with that.
Yeah? I don't know. Unless we want to rapid fire all the Mr. Freeze puns we can remember. Always winterize your pipes!
Chill.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age! That one's not really a pun, though.
I am made of ice and am gold.
Ice to meet you.
I already said that one.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. Sorry.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, you know, subscribe to the show or whatever, you know, like follow the show and go give us some stars on whatever app you're listening to your podcast on, or, you know, just tell somebody. Word of mouth goes so far and getting an audience for a show and helping people find the show, you know, you telling someone face to face is so much more personal than even a 5-star review. But 5-star reviews are awesome too, because, you know, then computers do all the work. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become a supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and you become an executive producer, so you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find the links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like. And if you're really upset by me supporting my Batman and Robin support, then you can also feel free to drop me some hate mail.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with supporting this movie. There is a charm of this movie that is very overlooked, and people shouldn't just straight straight up hate on this movie without seeing the joy that is underneath. There, that's my poster blurb. Don't hate on this movie. Look for the joy underneath.
And it's less wordy than the other one you read.
Yeah, that's right. I used to like this one. It was created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.
Doo 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 doo.